Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tribal Wisdom Radio, your marriage support network. Tune in for all things love, marriage, and family. We are devoted to love. Here we go.
Here we go, indeed. I am so happy to have you guys back for another hour of Tribal Wisdom, where we will be discussing From Grief to Gratitude with our guest tonight, Shawnee Benton Gibson. Now, some of you don't know, but I just made a mad dash into the studio coming from a review, and I should have been here much earlier, but the bus just stopped, and I had to run like the wind to get here on time and get this thing started, but I'm so grateful that, and gratitude I do have for for making it on time to be with you guys tonight. So a little bit about our guest. Shawnee Benton Gibson is the co-founder and co-president of the Spirit of a Woman Rites of Passage and Leadership Development Institute. The program's mission is to educate, elevate, and affect positive and long-lasting change in the lives of young people of color and their families. Shawnee uses performing arts and energy work and many different techniques to really bring about healing and other things, and just different healing in a person on a daily basis. I'm not even going to continue to talk about it. I'm going to have her introduce herself and tell us where she's from, what she does, and how she gets that done. Shawnee, are you there?
I'm absolutely here, sis. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm excellent. Just taking it easy and was just posting on Facebook so that you and I can co-create this conversation with the listeners. And I don't know if you open up the floor to ask questions or receive questions from the listening audience, but I'm definitely excited about however this is going to unfold tonight. So good evening, everybody who's listening, and good evening, Cynthia, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I'm so excited to have you on, and I absolutely open up the floor for questions. So to our listeners who may just be listening via the internet, if you'd like to call in, the number is 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 to let us know that you have a question or a comment for tonight's guest, and we will bring you right in. So let's get right into the topic, From Grief to Gratitude. I love that you posted that earlier, because I posted a different topic, but you said it best. Because we are talking about the stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's so many ways to discuss grief, because we could be talking about the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job, the loss of so many things. Loss is a common thing in life. So it's great that we're having this conversation. So why don't you just please introduce yourself? I did just a little bit of a job doing that, but mm-hmm. introduce yourself. let's get into it.
Okay, awesome. So my name is Shawnee Renee Benton Gibson. I'm a licensed social worker. I'm also an author and a healer, a proud mother of three. I'm an entrepreneur, a socialpreneur, which means that my job, my business is about the transformation and elevation of people. Particularly their mind, body, and spirit, just experiencing or supporting them in experiencing the best life that they can possibly have because they said yes to themselves. I'm also a performance artist. I don't claim dance as much as other things, but I'm a writer. I compose music. I do a lot of things, but, you know, I'm really, really most proud of the fact that I was born to do the work of healing, and I've just in the last few years claimed the title of healer. We're all healers, but some of us have a more specific role in that process, in that energy, in that modality. So I unashamedly and unabashedly call myself a healer because I get to experience the powerful exchange of energy with people and support them in being their best selves. So tonight, I'm just really, really grateful for those who are listening, and I pray and hope that folks do have questions and they're not shy. And they give both you, Cynthia, and myself an opportunity to share tools that can support them in their healing process. And just as you said, Cynthia, healing, we can heal or be grieving and experiencing loss on multiple levels. So I want to talk tonight about the multifaceted experience of grief, loss, but more importantly, the transformative experience of healing through those processes and learning from them so that when it comes about again, you know what tools to activate so that you can move through it as quickly as possible and engage in the things that are going to make you most powerful. So once again, thank you for having this conversation and allowing me to be a part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love that you said that we're moving forward to become more powerful through our healing and through grief, coming through
yes.
grief.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want to start this conversation? Because you and I had a conversation, and we enjoyed that conversation.
Yes, we did.
We were just talking and talking away, and we were like, okay, save it for the show.
Exactly. Yeah, where would I like to dive in? Well, let me start where I am experiencing the most conversation these days. And people don't necessarily call it grief. But I've been dealing a lot with or coaching a lot of people around the loss of, I would say, innocence. I speak to a lot of women about their experiences in their younger years when they were, you know, exposed to things before they were ready to, intrapsychically or emotionally or psychologically ready to experience those things. So I've been talking to women about the experiences of sexual violence, molestation, rape, and that's a really significant loss and for many a traumatic experience, and I'll explain the reason why I'm not saying automatically traumatic. Also, I've been speaking to a lot of women and men about relationship loss, and quite a few of the women and men in my life have experienced a loss of loved ones, particularly parents. And then finally, this is October, and I've been invited to a lot of events to deal with breast cancer, and I'm doing a performance with my two daughters on the 25th at a breast cancer gala just to celebrate the lives of five women who have experienced and had triumph over breast cancer. And there's grief and loss on multiple layers around that, and some of it I wasn't even aware of until I interviewed the women that are part of that event because we're putting together the piece based on their story. So we got to interview them and hear all their experiences. And I'm like, significant loss was felt, not just the breast, which people know about, you know, having one breast removed or both breasts removed, but all of that other stuff that comes with the chemo and just the loss of a connection with the body because the chemo takes you through all of these stages and it's toxic and, you know, just the hair loss. Like there's so many layers of grieving and loss that women experience when they're going through the process of trying to transform a diagnosis into, you know, cancer that is going into recession and being healed from that. So there's lots of places I can dive in, but those topics have been like swirling around and I've been engaged in them at least every other day, one or more of those topics with people. So, you know, if you have questions about that, I can dive in and share like what I impart to those sisters who and brothers who share these things with me. But I don't know if you have a specific question or if you want to focus on one of those topics in particular to start.
Well, you know what? A lot of times people don't necessarily even know that they're grieving. So why don't we just go ahead and start with the definition of grief, if you will?
Okay. And now I'm not the textbook type of chick, and I'm saying that just like that because that's just what I do is I speak from what my spirit tells me to say. So, you know, whoever's out there who is looking for that type of academic response to your question, you're not going to get that on this show. So you might as well hang up now because I'm going to disappoint you. So how I relate to grief is on three different levels mainly, which is, you know, a shift in the mind, the body, and the spirit. So, you know, we're thinking people. So if you have a situation where you're engaging in a relationship or a circumstance in your life and there's been a major shift in it, or even a half a degree of a shift, if you're accustomed to things flowing and going in a particular way, you may experience loss and a disconnect or an experience of imbalance when that is no longer present for you, whatever that circumstance or that person is no longer present in your life. So they can be alive, very much alive, but you don't have access to them, and so you're grieving the loss of that person. So people have experienced divorce, or they've been in a relationship for a while, and that relationship ends, and the person is no longer in their personal space. If they live together, if they would spend time together, they're grieving that exchange with that person and that experience. There are people who have worked on jobs. It doesn't have to be a long time. If you've grown accustomed to a routine and been connected to the execution of the job on a daily basis, and then you get laid off or fired or whatever the circumstances may be, or the job, the business closes, and you're no longer engaging in that routine or that energy or the exchange with coworkers, you will grieve that. Plus, the compounded grief and loss of income, you know, that your income is affected by the loss of a job. If you don't have supplemental income or a spouse or a mate or other people to support you when you lose the job. So that's a double layer or multiple layered experience of grief. So I would say it's any situation that you experience a loss of something and it was unexpected, or even if it's expected, you're not, you know, it throws your equilibrium off. So if you have like a scale and you have weight on it and there are equal weights on it, and then you take one of the weights off one side, and the scale is going to tip and it's going to hit the ground. And so when your equilibrium is thrown off because you've experienced something that was present, now gone, and it's not always across the board, but I'm just trying to give at least some thought about what grief experiences can do to an individual. And we usually concentrate on death, like you said, but you can have a death of a relationship, a death of a circumstance, a death of a concept in your life, or an energy in your life that can cause your feeling of balance and your equal footing on the ground to be lost. And then you have to process that and move through it. And people move through it in different ways.
All right. You know, from that, I really enjoyed everything that you just said. I'm just going to tell you what I got from that. You basically said when you experience a major shift or imbalance from a loss of access to a person or experience. Those were the words that I pulled out when you just explained everything. And I'm like, that is so true, because it doesn't necessarily have to be a death, but just to a person or experience can put you in a place of grief. So
absolutely.
If you don't mind, I'm going to make that our definition tonight. I'm going to post that up.
That
a little later. Now, with that definition of what grief is, and something you just ended, it was a perfect opening to what is it that grief can do to a person?
Right. I know grief is, my caveat before I get into this is that it can be an absolute catalyst for elevation in your life. It's a rite of passage. So any form of grief, not just death. Death is the final rite of passage that every human being or living thing experiences. So we're born, that's our first, and then we die, that's our last. And when you experience a loss like that, it can also be a rite of passage, a transition from one stage or way of being to another. So what I will do, Cynthia, anybody who knows me, who's listening in, I use myself more than anyone else because I know myself best. Or I've gotten to know myself best over the years. So I've experienced multiple types of loss. And one of them that I will share with you that's known publicly, because I've done shows about it and expressed it in different arenas, is that I lost my mind and my mental stability after I gave birth to my second daughter in 1989. And I went through postpartum depression, which led to a form of psychosis, like having hallucinations, like thinking that my child wasn't mine and thinking of doing something to harm her and doing something to harm myself. So I lost literally my level of mental stability, which had a spiritual impact on me as well, because I didn't have my footing. I didn't know how to tap into, because I wasn't myself, the tools that I knew to use from childhood, which is prayer, meditation, and just one of my spiritual gifts is just to express and speak. And I stopped speaking because I'm like, I can't tell people that I sometimes think about harming myself or harming my baby. So when you go through grief and loss, the most extreme experience is that you can, you know, feel like you're losing your mental stability, and you can also feel like your spiritual footing has been lost, because you may be mad at God or the Creator or whatever your spiritual understanding is. You may feel like you're not aligned with it because of some of the you might experience devastation of the loss of a loved one or the loss of a job or a loss of anything that you felt was a major part, a significant part of your development day to day or your ability to sustain yourself day to day. I hope I've answered. I mean, I can definitely, I'm going to go deeper into it, and if we hear questions from people, I'll definitely share more. But, you know, grief impacts people differently. It depends on your emotional makeup, your physical makeup, I would say, as well, because I've experienced grieving periods, and some people eat when they're grieving, and I'm the type that loses my appetite. You can literally physically go through changes and not be able to eat and take care of yourself. Some people go into a deep depression when they're grieving, and they don't get up to wash or comb their hair, or they can't get up to go to work, which leads to a ripple effect because you start doing damage to your physical body, and then you might impact, you know, your ability to sustain or maintain a job, which can lead to financial losses. And then you might be so much deeply rooted in the grief that you might lose relationships. So if you have a partner in your life and you're not talking and not interacting because you're grieving, they may not know how to handle that, and it can cause a loss in the relationship. So those are just examples.
Okay, okay. So through everything that you do, because you actually use the arts to help people heal from experiences and to move into a place of gratitude, can you talk about your experience with that, and then we'll move into how we can use that to go from grief to gratitude?
Absolutely. Very specific example of how I've used, let me go back because I'm about to talk about something very deliberate. But one of the things that I was able to engage in as an artist that wasn't even on purpose, but it happened as a byproduct of me doing engaging in artistry or a performance that was highly emotional, is that I got to play parts. And you know of this because you are part of a spiritual community that I was part of for almost 15 years, the Ma'afa, which is dealing with the transatlantic slave trade and the impact on people of color and people who are part of the diaspora. So, you know, it involves reenacting stories around people being enslaved, African peoples being enslaved and mishandled, mistreated, and just stripped of their humanity. So I, for many years, a part of an enslaved African woman who was being raped on a regular basis, being impregnated by the slave master, plus the men on the plantation who were also enslaved and having these babies and not knowing what the babies were going to look like and feeling just violated and like she was hopeless and helpless in this whole situation. So I got to embody that part. And as a result of me playing that part, I got to grieve my own experience with molestation. I got to grieve my own experience as being mishandled, mistreated, and abused as a woman of color by men, by women, by family members, who, you know, because hurt people hurt people. So yes. I got a chance to use the art to, and I didn't know I was doing it until I was in the midst of it. And a lot was, in retrospect, I recognized that I was healing myself, but doing those lines, screaming, crying, dancing, just allowed me to be able to release some of the stuff that was trapped in my body. Because if you don't know it, if you didn't know before this show, please know that when we don't deal with our grief in ways that are helpful and balanced, that it gets stuck in our body energetically, and it can manifest into physical issues, ulcers and heart disease and high blood pressure and just high-level stress situations where you're not processing information can lead to dis-ease in the body. So absolutely, it started with that. And then, you know, as I move forward, I just recognize that when I do my healing work, when I'm the most powerful is when I'm able to inject the artistry into it. So I've done groups with women and men where I've actually used music and the lyrics of songs to support them in getting out what they need to get out and saying what they need to say about their lives and their grief and their hurt and their pain. I've also used poetry. I've done role play. And now in the latter 10 years of my career, I've studied as a psychodramatist, which is the merging of drama or theatrical pieces with counseling, and people get to reenact things in their real lives using the group members as players, in, so to speak, in the process to help them go through and revisit things that didn't work for them so they can, you know, have the experience of release and catharsis that can be available to you if you do that. So just for an example, I've done psychodramas where people have actually brought their mothers who they didn't get a chance to go to the funeral. Let's say something happened and they were angry at their mother died and they didn't go to the funeral. They get an opportunity to reenact the funeral and use the group members as family members and to play the mother, and then they get a chance to say what they want to say and, you know, just pay homage to the person who's passed on and do the ritual that they missed because they were angry and closed off from their mother when the mother was alive and during the time when the actual funeral was taking place. So it has been a powerful medium for transformation and for healing, and their words can't even describe. But what I would also finally say is that I get called upon by people who deal with issues of domestic violence, like people who are clinicians or professional folks running programs, to come in and get the stories from these individuals. And then once I collect the stories, myself and my daughters or me and other performance artists will take the stories and turn them into original pieces of music. We'll write, do spoken word pieces. We'll do all kinds of theatrical or artistic. We'll meld those things together to create a piece that's going to allow them to hear the stories, play back to them, and then also heal from that. There's something very powerful about witnessing your own story live and in effect with real bodies playing it, and you get to watch and experience it. It's definitely different than going to talk therapy, which I'm a proponent of, but it's just different being able to be tapped into on a visceral level, watching your own story be played out on stage. So there's lots of ways the arts have played in people healing from grief, loss, and bereavement.
Let's go deeper into the process of watching your story being played out before you or even being a part of it. What is the impact? I know that you're saying that it is a healing process, but can we really kind of talk right through that process so that people can understand what happens when you are physically there watching the enactment or being a part of it? I mean, I've seen people break down. I've seen people just, you know, go through it with no feeling, and they still don't understand what they're going through. So what happens, you know, why the arts is the real question. What happens when we use art to express or release what's happening in our life at that time?
Right.
And how does it really help us heal?
Right. One of the things that I share when I work with the healing partners, but I don't call them clients, patients or anything, they're partners in healing, because I heal as well when I work with people. It's one, I don't know what term to use for this. Let me use this because I can't think of anything else. When there is, you release energy when you speak, for sure, and it plays its part. It's a very powerful tool to utilize. But, you know, it's often said that your nonverbal is much louder than your verbal. So, you know, when you're holding things in your body, you know, like I said, it creates disharmony, discord, dis-ease. So when you're on stage either acting it out yourself, you get an opportunity not only to vocalize, but you get an opportunity through movement and through song, through all of these mechanisms, these modalities, an opportunity to release on different levels. So when I speak, I release in one way. When I'm engaged in motion, movement, I'm releasing in another way. I'm sweating out the toxic energy of hate, pain, upset, dis-ease. You know, when I'm singing, when I'm vocalizing in that way, it's different than talking. Just the rhythms and the energy, and it's a vibration that's just very, very different than just, you know, me expressing through words what I want to say. When I'm on stage with other people and we're enacting it together, the common experience of the movement, the speaking, the singing, you know, whatever those combinations are, doing it in partnership with other people provides another level of healing. Then being in the audience as a receiver of this energy, this information, this process, you're not only watching and receiving, but you're also giving back through your emotional processing of it and the watching and the witnessing. So all this energy is circulating. So it's much different than sitting in the office with your therapist just talking back and forth. And when we keep stuff rolling around in our head and we only use one intelligence, which is our intellectual capacity or academic or whatever that is that you're using when you're processing and thinking, then you're leaving out the other intelligences. And a key one when you're grieving and going through the loss of something is your emotional intelligence. So I always encourage people to use as many intelligences as they can when they're going through the grieving process. Write, go to the beach and experience the ocean, you know, run or exercise so you can sweat it out and move the energy in your body. So I would say when people are performing either on stage, acting out their own stuff, or they've told their story and they're watching it being enacted, or if you're enacting someone else's story, that everybody involved in all that energy is supporting the healing process and moving it along much faster than if you're just holding it in your mind, thinking about it every day.
Wow. All right. I do get that, and I absolutely support that. For all the listeners who are experiencing this chat, I love that the feeling that I'm getting when I understand what happens when you are literally moving the energy around and not just sitting and talking with a therapist, as Shawnee just expressed. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the fact that you are able to really move that energy, experience it, and I suppose they also have, there's a form of letting go,
yes,
during that experience.
Yes, absolutely.
That is really an awesome way to use art. I have read a few case studies and different readings about how they're using art to help heal autistic children, or it's called,
mm-hmm,
art therapy, I believe. Is
yes,
it? Art.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely something you want to look into. If you are experiencing grief and you have a talent, or you want to use your talent to help you heal, you should look into art therapy. Definitely check out Shawnee's website to see if she could guide you through that. And then one more thing that you said was being a receiver. What is that feeling when you know that there's an audience watching your story and either connecting with it, sympathizing with it, or know that they've been there, knowing that they've been there, they receive a healing from watching your story?
Right. This is a great question, and it's tied into my book. My book is entitled Walk in the Light with Me, and I say the most important word in that title is with, that there's something about witnessing that is more powerful than you ever being in a space of isolation or solitude dealing with something. Now, solitude has its place, and isolation, I should say, is another form of dis-ease when we isolate and run from and hide from ourselves, hide from other people. But when you're experiencing the loss, the pain, the grief with someone, it just provides another level or a deeper level of release. So when I cry alone, it's different than when I lay in your arms, Cynthia, and cry and release and feel your heartbeat and your flesh and the heat from your body. It's just like a baby when, you know, how you comfort a baby is they're crying. You don't just leave them to flail and lay and just scream on their own. Some people do that, but it's not the most effective way to deal with a baby and support them so they can be soothed and, you know, fall asleep eventually. So I think the same way about human beings. We've taught ourselves to manage on our own. Oh, I got this. It is what it is. I mean, some of the things that we say just are antithetical to our own elevation and transformation in our humanity. But they're just being in the audience and being able to receive that story and hold the space for my story to be in the air, to land, and to be held in the space and then released. Because I'm not a believer in it just laying there, because the people can walk out with your story and that energy, and then they are made sick. And, you know,
right,
I can answer
right.
If I have questions about what I mean by that, I'll definitely explain. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, just being responsible with the energy. So anybody, like, I'm a person, if I open you up, I'm responsible to close you back up. It's just like a surgeon. They go in, they do surgery, they don't leave the tools inside of you and don't sew you back up. You would die, you would get infection. So whoever is the person leading the process, whether it be in a group setting or an individual one-on-one in an office or on stage, if you're the director or whomever acting and performing, that you have a responsibility to the audience not to leave them holding that energy that you've left. That's just my belief, especially in healing art.
Right.
In the book, I have a chapter called Can I Get a Witness? You know, and I open it up talking about this common thing, this philosophical question. If a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, did it really fall? Is there really a sound? Yeah, there is, but there's something about a witness that just gives the tree more validity, and it makes it more real. So, you know, when I tell my story to someone else, when I act it out, when someone is there to witness my tears, then it has more power, and it gives me an understanding that I'm not by myself, and this grief is real and I'm not going crazy, and I can have permission to release it with witnesses to be there to support me in doing so.
Now, I know I'm going to have to address this because I could just imagine me listening to it. To our listeners, Shawnee has never cried in my arms. Let me just tell you that right now.
I would if I had to, though.
I know. Listen, and I would let you. I would let you. But
thank
I was like,
you.
Oh, wow, I could just see me getting plenty of messages. I was like, what is she talking about? She heard your heartbeat and she was crying in your arms. So I said, like, okay, let's just go ahead and explain this right now. That,
yeah,
that
you know what's so deep about that? Let me say
what?
This really quickly. I want to create a space where to be the orchestrator or the trailblazer that creates a space where when I need to grieve, I can pull somebody off the bus and be like, yo, can I lay here and cry?
Yes.
And it'll be all right. It's not,
you know,
and
what?
That's a problem.
It,
but that's
it,
my
it,
vision,
it,
my dream.
But you know what? I can see where that could backfire in a number of ways. I think you should go ahead and do it now. I'm not trying to tell you not to do it. But I'm going to tell you I can see how that could backfire, because if somebody pull me off a bus that I don't know, we got problems, Shawnee. I'm just trying to say. And I'm
gonna
say,
I got it. I got
so,
it.
Shawnee, don't
my
you?
Vision.
Yes. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to find Shawnee right now to get strangers pulling me off the bus. Hugging me up, this is uncalled for. So I'm just letting you know right now that if a stranger pulls me off the bus, I'ma know it was you.
All right.
Okay.
Now.
All right. So, with the conversation that we had just had, we clearly have some individuals who would like to join the conversation. I want to bring them in. Caller ending in 6560, please introduce yourself and. Let us know if you have a question or a comment for our guest tonight.
Well, I indeed have a comment. I'm Sister Shawnee. This is Batavile.
Hey, oh my goodness.
How are you?
I'm excellent, hon. I'm even better now. I haven't spoken to you in a while. Blessings to you.
Well, blessings to you as well. And I want to publicly thank you for what you do, for the work that you do. And to let folks know that I am a personal beneficiary of your work. I can speak firsthand about what it is that you do and what you provide. And, I mean, I was really surprised when I did. I came to one of your sessions sort of out of the blue and left a changed person.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was one of your, forgive me, I've forgotten exactly what it is called, but, you know, when one has an opportunity to be on stage and to play either themselves or somebody else and have somebody play the part of someone with whom they need to speak.
Yeah, it's called psychodrama.
Psychodrama, exactly.
Yes.
And it was, from a therapeutic standpoint, the absolutely most powerful therapeutic experience that I've ever had. Ever. And it was hard. Yes, it was really, really hard. I will say that, because the pain is real.
Yes.
And it's an amazing thing to have somebody, and especially if you've not been able to dialogue with the person with whom who brings you pain.
Right.
And so now you have somebody sitting as a representative of that person, and that person is actually going to listen to you, and that person is actually going to acknowledge you. And that's what people really seek when they've been hurt, is acknowledgement. And so in the psychodrama process, you know, you get a chance to have that acknowledgement. And even if it really isn't the person who hurt you, you know, maybe there's an issue with a parent or with a former partner or something like that, even if it isn't actually that person sitting across from you, after a while you forget that, and it becomes really real. So more than any other process I've ever gone through, this provided an opportunity to really work things through. I like what you said about how when you're sitting in the therapist's office and it's just you talking, it's sort of a more intellectual, sort of cerebral exercise. But when you are on stage with a psychodrama, you embody it and move with it and have somebody then dialoguing with you in that conversation. And I couldn't recommend it higher. Everybody needs to do it.
Thank you, sis. I mean, that's a gift. Nothing that I could say could top someone experiencing it firsthand, either through my direction or someone else's, because I trust this work implicitly. And once I was doing it actually not knowing I was doing it, because I've always been leaning towards using role play and drama and music and art to support. But once I got actually trained in it, I was like, oh, my God, I'm never going to turn back and not use these techniques. I actually facilitated something for an organization today and used psychodrama, because you can use it in many forms. It's not all about dealing with grief and loss and relationships. You can use it in corporate environments and support, you know, the work that I do with young people and stuff. It's just putting stuff in action as opposed to just talking and lecturing people about it. So thank you for that testimony. It's been a long time, but just I feel so connected because we did that work. You know, and that's the type of work that psychodrama provides, or the healing it provides. Like, once you go through it with a group of people, it's like you'll never forget that somebody played your mother and allowed you to release and forgive her for 40 years of hurt and pain. I mean, it's a powerful, powerful tool. So thank you, Ms. Abiele, for just being on the call.
It's my pleasure.
Yes.
Now, our mutual friend Ian has just reminded us that you were in a play that we covered, that we interviewed you guys before on for Crazy Love.
Yeah, I saw his post. Yeah, the thing about Crazy Love, which was crazy for me, is I played a part of a sister that I could relate to. Like I said, anybody who knows me, who's listening in, knows that I'm just straight. I'm a straight talker. You know, and I share my life. I feel like the more I expose pieces or elements of my life, the more I grow and expand myself and give permission for people to do the same. So a character that I played in Crazy Love, her name was Fran, and she was having this long-standing relationship with a married man in the play, and she was just losing it because she gave up so much of herself, you know, to protect him. He had a family. She had abortions, and, you know, she just gave up a good portion of her life and a part of the development of her career for that relationship. And that's something to mourn. Like, any woman who's engaged in a relationship, or man with someone who's in a relationship with someone else, you're engaging in grief and loss every day.
Yes.
You know, the loss of the dream that they're going to leave, the loss of what your concept or fantasy was about what an actual relationship could be, because I don't think anybody, well, some people will actually tell me, I'd rather be in a relationship with someone married because I don't have to be as committed. People say that. I just actually think they're lying, but that's just me, you know. You know, when you're engaged in a dynamic like that, you're constantly cutting open your heart and sewing it back up, cutting it open and sewing it back up. So you absolutely experience that. But what I was going to say is acting on stage, playing that part, saying those words just took me back a few years back when I was actually engaged in a relationship with someone who had a relationship with someone else, and just the pain of that, you know. So it's very real for me, but the arts have always risen to the occasion for me. Even when I wasn't aware, I'm like, wow, I'm healing, and I'm healing by default. Now I heal on purpose through the arts, but I absolutely used to heal by default.
All right. So we've got a few minutes left. The time always goes so quickly when we talk.
Okay.
Let's move the conversation closer to what happens after the enactment, what happens after the release and the movement of the energy. How do we maintain the healing process, or how do we continue the healing process in order to maintain the healing of what was shared?
So you're speaking like after someone engages in a psychodramatic process or a series of those types of groups, how do they sustain themselves once they're out of that intensive space and they have to deal with life on life's terms every day?
Yes.
Okay, great. Great question. So, you know, I talk about this in the book, and, you know, I share this with people that everybody, just like with learning styles, like I'm auditory and visual as my dominant style, but I'm also kinesthetic. So I'm all three, but those two are the dominant ones. So when I was going through my healing process, from the depression that I experienced, as I spoke about earlier, losses of relationships, loss of economic stability. Because, you know, after I left my job 5 years ago, there was this period where things were really rough and I was stressed out to no end. What I had to apply was the things that spoke to my dominant learning styles. And I just figured this out within the last few years. I'm a singer. I'm a spoken word person. I love speech and sound. This is really, really important to me. So what I engaged in to support me with sustaining myself or maintaining myself when I was going through troubled times was guided meditation, you know, so mm-hmm. I could hear a voice guiding me through and taking me from the top of a hill and walking me down and going to the ocean and swimming and taking breaths, you know, and then see the sun and, you know, touch the sun. So that really, really supported me. Also, music just had a deep impact on me. Not music where it's like, oh, woe is me, and, you know, yeah. songs can take you deep and have you wanting to slit your wrists. But just listening to songs that were just soothing to my spirit, like gospel and jazz, that uplifting songs that spoke to, like, India Ari is great because she speaks about just being a powerful, elevated woman. You know, I'm also a writer, so just journaling really, really helped me. And it's not even a structured writing, just writing, free writing, and then you don't even have to read it. You just get it out your system. If it's curses, if it's, you know, just a prayer or asking God why. You might write why 300 times over and over and over again, and then all of a sudden, because you've been engaged in that writing meditation, you get an answer why. You get an answer to your why. So for everybody on the line listening, if you know what your learning style is, I would tap into those things that would feed that, because that's how your body gets stimulated and that's how you process information. So, you know, it's different for everyone, but I offer a multitude of different things for people to tap into and to try so they can figure out what formula works best. Like, one other thing I will say about me that helped my healing, I'm very physical. So, you know, working out, doing yoga, letting my body heat up and then sweat releases pain, toxins, and it just grounds me. So there may be other people listening in that you're physical too. You're a kinesthetic type of learner and a kinesthetic type of person. So you might want to engage in, even if it's just 10 minutes of exercise per day, so that you can release some of the tightness in your body that grief, loss, and pain and upset can cause.
Okay. You know, I have a serious question.
Sure.
Can part of my dominant communication style or type of learning include shopping for shoes?
I would say if shopping is a balanced way in which you express, then great. But oftentimes, if somebody is going in the direction of shopping or eating or drinking or whatever, like in excess, like I got to shop so I can feel better, then it's a slippery slope.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I wouldn't say a shoe shopping.
I'm just trying to find out, you know.
But it's a good question, because people might be like, I feel better now, but it's like, okay, now you got loss of money. You know, you're just distracting yourself and not dealing with the emotional content. I don't think shoe shopping helps you to release on an emotional and spiritual level.
Well, hold on.
Like, don't be messing with my shoes.
I'm just trying to say, there might be some individuals where when we find a nice pair of boots that actually fit. See, I don't know about you, size 7, 8, and 9, but I'm a size 10. See, so
oh my God,
when I find a beautiful pair of size 10s at a nice price that I could just take home that are comfortable, I have like it's cathartic for me. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there for me. I'm not telling anybody else to do that. But to what you said about guiding people to their dominant type of learning or communication, you said that you use different methods to try to help them figure out which is theirs?
Yes. I will ask them about their learning style, because I've just found over the years just studying my own and just figuring that out, you know, how I learn best, I'm like, why wouldn't that be connected to how we heal best? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I lean towards, I'm very visual, then maybe it's important for me to go to the beach and sit at the ocean and look out at the ocean so that I can breathe and just be one with nature. That's the other thing, too. You know, I'm a person that's very heavily into nature. Not everybody is. So for me, what grounds me and what gives me peace is to stand in the earth, take my shoes off, and just feel the ground and the earth under my feet in the soil, and it just really, really supports me in releasing. But that may not work for you, Cynthia, or Matabele, or other people who are listening, Ian, or other people who are listening on this call. It might be something else for you. Maybe some person, you know, somebody else on the call needs to be at rest when they're going through a grieving process, and others should be in motion when they're going through it. So it depends on the other individual who is meeting with me, talking with me. I ask questions, and then I support them in finding it. And you might test a few things that don't work, you know, until you find the absolute thing that works for you. And it may be a combination of things, which was true for me.
Right, right. No, even you just talking about it, I automatically felt relaxed because I just went to a memory of I used to love to visit my grandmother, my father's mother, before she passed away, and you know, in Georgia, and where she was in Georgia, it wasn't a city. It was deep down, and you know, down there by Claxton, Vidalia, and other towns you've never heard of. And one of my favorite things was to just take my sandals off and just go stand in her yard, and feel that fresh soil underneath my feet. So that just you speaking about it took me back to the experience, and I automatically felt a level of relaxation. So I totally agree with you that it's good for us to tap into experiences, physical, mental, and spiritual, that will take us to a place of safety, so that we can automatically start moving toward a place where we can release a pain that we've experienced and move back toward that place of relaxation.
Absolutely. And you just triggered a thought that I do not want to leave this conversation without saying it, that our five senses can either be an absolute support of our transforming grief into gratitude, or they can do the opposite. So if you're not aware of your triggers, you can literally go out, like you just spoke about your grandmother. You might be walking around, or you might be at an event, and somebody, an elder sister, might walk by you and be wearing your grandmother's perfume. And either that can bring a smile to your face and have you like, oh, grandma, or can have you fall to your knees out at the event crying because you're in such grief about the loss of grandma. So just like, you know, your learning styles can tell you what it is that you can tap into so you can heal. Your five senses can support your healing, or they can trigger, which also supports your healing. Like if you're suppressing it and not trying to allow yourself to feel and grieve, your five senses may trigger you into without you knowing, without you being aware and really ready for it, trigger you into going into a space of grieving. So smell, sight, you know, finding a letter that the person wrote, seeing pictures, touching something that reminds you of the person or the situation. You know, you may have been in a relationship with I'm making this up. This is funny, but not. It's just an example. But you might have been in a relationship with a man that shaved his head. He's bald. Now you see that everywhere. So everywhere you see a bald man of that complexion, you get triggered. Your belly flips. It reminds you of it. So, you know, being aware of your triggers, being aware of what stimulates you as far as what stimulates you most as far as your five senses is really important. I'm extremely sensitive to smell. So it even can support me, you know, because incense and all other stuff takes me to a place where I can go into a meditative state, or it might trigger me because I'm smelling something that reminds me of something that was unpleasant or is associated with a death or a loss. So just being mindful and aware of what our physical bodies and all of these wonderful gifts that we get in the senses and in our learning styles that support us or can also trigger us if we don't pay attention.
One of the individuals in the chat room said that they like nice long baths. That triggers a nice relaxation feeling for them. And I'm like, yes, I forgot about that one.
That's right.
Yes, nice long baths. So two more questions, and then we can actually go in and tell people how they could connect with you in order to have the experience with you. One question is about moving through grief in order to truly experience success in your life. How do we do that? Because, you know, I've been listening to a lot of my friends lately and a lot of, you know, kind of eavesdropping on the bus, and I hear people always say, you know, I didn't realize that certain things were holding me back. I didn't realize I wasn't thinking big enough about my business or about my home life or about, you know, what I even need to purchase. I always kept saying my logo is so small, and everyone kept saying, why is it so small? It really needs to be bigger. How is it that grief impacts our vision of success for our life?
Right. Well, first and foremost, when you think people think of grief, they think of death. You know, like I said, and lots of things can die. It doesn't have to necessarily be your physical body, but if you're experiencing the fact that there's this finite amount of time that we have with people, with situations, that nothing, sometimes the thing you thought was going to last, a relationship or a job or an opportunity, it can create and generate fear in you. And when somebody dies, for sure, you start thinking about your own mortality and it's like, how much time do I have? Have I done enough? And then sometimes people get ignited around that. They're like, I don't have that much time, so I need to create that logo that matches my bigness and who I am and why I'm supposed to be here. Or it goes in the opposite direction. It's like, you know, I get paralyzed and then I don't take action. I'm just like lost in the story of I'm not going to be here much longer, so why bother? You know, so definitely complicated grief over something can stunt your growth and keep you from being all that you can be and put you in a box, you know, or dealing with someone who hasn't processed their grief properly and you're around that energy all the time. Their stagnant energy, what I call the walking dead, can really mm-hmm. kill off possibility for you and create a toxic environment where you can't grow and expand yourself. So it's not just what you're holding, it's what the people around you are holding. And if y'all are collectively stunted and repressed and suppressed, then it's going to keep creativity from flowing and abundance from coming in all forms. So absolutely, we need to be dealing with the stories, and we get lost in the story. This person left me. This person died on me. Like, literally, really? You know, and, you know, I know sometimes people commit suicide, but even that's their personal choice and the power that they wielded about the power of life and death that they chose. If you choose to make that your albatross to carry on your back, or like carrying around this heavy burden that keeps you from moving and flowing and creating in your life, it's a choice you make, you know, but absolutely when that happens, when you get lost in a story and you make the story your own cage, then you will not grow and expand in that business, that relationship, that opportunity. You're not going to pursue it to the fullest, or if you do, it's going to be, I think your outcomes will be inconsistent because you're blocked and stopped in some aspect of your psyche and your being.
I love it. Do not let loss or grief get you blocked or stopped. I'm going to have to just post that at some point tonight. So last question. What are some tips to help individuals create their own rituals starting at home? If you know, they can come to the center, they can get together with family, whatever it is, but how can they come together to create their own rituals to begin to move through grief, whether it be singing to self-soothe, whether it be the long hot baths, you know, whether it be me buying my boots and shoes, don't hate, don't judge me. Whatever it is, can you give us a few tips of how we can begin to either journal or do something about starting a ritual to help us confront grief that we may not have truly been aware of, that's still in our lives, that we're still holding in our bodies?
You know, where I will go with this is there are already established rituals that have been lost amongst our people. When I say our people, I'm not just speaking of people of African descent like myself. I'm saying our people, meaning humanity, rituals that exist, and then also very rituals that are part of specific cultures. I know Brother Ian is Jamaican. He's on the line. You just spoke of your people. I think you spoke of being in Georgia or being in the South. You know, we have these roots, and there are things that have been done that work, and there are things that have been done that don't work. For example, what comes to mind, and I have forgotten about it, when the babies, when I was a child, used to be born in our family, my great-grandfather actually would come and take the babies and walk around the house with them. I never knew why he was doing it, not meaning inside the house, but take the baby and circle the house with the baby, you know, and that and scene in Roots, you know, where I think with Kunta Kinte, he lifted up the baby and said, you know, behold, the only thing greater than ourselves. There are rituals that we have access to the internet. If you don't know and if you don't have family members that can tell you, which many of us do, we just don't ask the questions. You know, we can reinstate lost rituals for grieving and loss. You know, some of them I wouldn't personally do. Like some people take pictures of the bodies and stuff like that when you think of death. That's not something that I would choose to do. But I'm a person that erects altars. So I'm like, I'll put pictures of the living people when they were alive on, you know, on a table. It doesn't have to be a literal altar, but pictures of them. You can, you know, get flowers to, you know, in their memory. There are lots of things that you can do, but research is important. So if you can't think of it on your own, you can see what has been done by the people in your culture to support them in grieving and loss. And I'm a big proponent of creating your own rituals. So if your ritual is you buy a plant, you set that plant on the table, and you just breathe and look at the plant, whatever works for you that's going to keep you from being stuck in a space where you can't generate and create and be alive and walking amongst the living and not the walking dead, as I spoke earlier. If you remember, if you just are able to remember, put back together the fact that anything that you go through, whether it's lower vibrational experience or high vibrational experience, is a rite of passage to take you from one space in your life to another, then even though you'll feel the pain, it won't last or stay as long and become complicated grief. You'll be like, wow, I'm going to learn something on the other side of this. I can't see it right now, but I know I will. And if you journal, you can look at on October 1st, you was screaming and hollering and cursing God, and by the time you got to January 1st, you're like, wow, I learned that I don't stay in touch with my family as much, and when this death happened, I started to call more. So, you know, whatever that process is for you, engage in it unapologetically, because other people may not understand, but if it works for you, do it as long as it's not harming you or harming someone else.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. So we need to look back at our past from coming from our people.
Absolutely.
Being in touch with family members, at least the positive family members, that can help us really come together and release. You know, it just put me in the mind of a family reunion. I used to love the Serenity Williamson family reunions. Boy, I tell you, those aunties can cook.
Yes.
Even though there's like rituals around food, healing and food, it was just something about the vicinity of how my grandmother and my aunts, they all lived like right across the road, because it wasn't the street. They lived right across the road from one another. So we would have a barbecue on one side of the street and a peanut boil and a crab boil on the other side of the street. And, you know, you can stop by uncle's house to grab some pecans. You know, it was just the close proximity of so much of the wisdom of our older generation that was very healing. They weren't afraid to just grab us up and be so grateful that we were just there.
Yes.
And that in itself was very healing, because, you know, they had experienced so many different types of loss when it came to children, grandchildren, whatever it was. So for them just to be grateful, just to have that gratitude, to be able to see their grandchildren or their grandnieces and to love up on them, just thinking about that experience just puts me in a good place, too. So thank you.
Yes, I'm glad to hear that. No, please, thank you for sharing.
That's
beautiful.
Thank you for talking about, that's just something else. So we have got a minute and a half left, and I do not want to neglect the opportunity to have you tell people where we can find you on social media, your website, Facebook, everything. Let's let everyone know where you are.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for that opportunity. So on Facebook, you can find me under Shawnee Benton Gibson, S-H-A-W-N-E-E, Benton, B-E-N-T-O-N, and Gibson, G-I-B-S-O-N. I have two websites. One is Spirit of a Woman, but the website for that organization is www.sow, like sowing seeds, leadership.com. So www.sowleadership.com. And then I have a second website, which is really more focused on my healing and spiritual counseling work, and that's the Griot's Healing Circle. And the Griot's Healing Circle, and the Griot's a storyteller, and it's spelled G as in George, R as in Robert, I as in Iceberg, O as in Oscar, T as in Tom, S as in Sam. The Griot's Healing Circle, www.thegriotshealingcircle.com. And what I would say about that is when we tell our stories, just thinking about ritual, one of the rituals is telling the story, speaking the names of those we have lost, sharing our experiences about them and the joys, the pain, the laughter. We forget to speak up because we think we're burdening people. But tell your story to those who are ready to receive it because it keeps the memory and the energy alive and flowing. If you want to reach me by phone, 718-781-6979. Again, 718-781-6979.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Shawnee, I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I cannot wait for us to chat again.
Yes.
And I know that we will. I know that we will definitely chat again. So once again, she is on Facebook. She has two websites. We will post that information in the event tonight. Okay. And was there anything else? Are you also on Twitter or anything?
Yeah, I'm getting better at Twitter. I'm so horrible when it comes to Twitter. I don't
come
tweet
on,
enough.
Man.
But yeah, I'm Shawnee the Griot. I think that's what I am. I'm going to get better, I promise, because Twitter's the place to I'm going to get it together before the year closes, I promise.
Okay. And make sure you post it in tonight's event so people will know how to find you on Twitter so we can follow you. As a matter of fact, I am going to hold you right now to having a Twitter chat. We're going to do a Twitter chat about grief, the very things that we talked about tonight.
Okay. Awesome.
By the end of the year, because a lot of people experience so much grief around the holidays, I think that it would be great for us to do something like that, to have a nice Twitter chat about grief, about overcoming grief, and about moving from grief to gratitude. And we can help as many people as we possibly can on Twitter.
Awesome. I'm down for it. Thank you, sis.
You're welcome. So once again, a wonderful chat to all of our listeners. We want to really say thank you. Check for the show notes on our website in the next couple of weeks. We'll see you next week. For our fitness, one of our fitness gurus will be on, and we'll talk to you soon. We love you. Good night.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Tribal Wisdom. Stop by bridaltribe.com and visit our media page for full recaps of every show, amazing articles, and free downloads. We have an ever-growing library of knowledgeable guests with vital information for any stage of your relationship. At Tribal Wisdom, we are order and excellence in action. We are devoted to love.